Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance and brought to us by our friends at AT&T. So Andrea Kramer joins us here one more time. We appreciate the time, Andrea. Thank you so much for joining us. And all right, so it's over now, right? We've now seen a number of different sides of Michael Jordan. I would say, though, and you kind of alluded to this when we had you on last week, that we saw at least a more mortal side or a more human side of Michael. What did you make of some of the stuff we saw over the last two episodes?
By the way, this is now 2 weeks in a row. People are going to start talking about us here. We have to be careful. No, I'm only kidding. It's great to be back on with you. I think that one of my biggest takeaways is for all of the, and I say this sort of semi-tongue-in-cheek here, but for all of these otherworldly athletic gifts and skills that have been on display that some of us have seen over the years, but some, as we've discussed before, some of the younger generation is not. For all of those, I think that we saw that Jordan is indeed human in the sense that he has all kinds of ranges of emotions, from extreme anger to extreme, you know, the emotion that he showed when his dad died and coming back and playing the first game and just, you know, sobbing uncontrollably on the floor after the win. And I just think we've seen the different sides of him emotionally that do prove that, you know what, people are multifaceted. They have a number of different sides to them. And I think that overall, Jordan was pretty true to who he was throughout this 10-part series.
You know what I also took away from this, and we only saw him for a brief moment at the beginning of, I believe, episode 5, which was Kobe Bryant. And, you know, Ian Thompson has a great book called The Soul of Basketball, and in there he talks to Kobe about his relationship with Michael. And Kobe says, look, 90% of what I learned is from Michael, like directly, like literally him and I having these conversations. And the more I watched the documentary, the more I really understood that relationship that we, most of us, really only found out about when Michael spoke while eulogizing him. So the one thing, though, that sticks out the most about that is that Michael was this tough guy behind the scenes, right, with teammates. And in front of the cameras, for the most part, he was pretty PC, right? Like, he gave you standard answers. Whereas with Kobe, when he became Kobe 24, let's call it, I think that Kobe embraced all that stuff with Michael, but just emoted it outwardly. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Well, there's a lot to unpack in that. I think, you know, one of the things that Kobe said, Kobe has talked about over the years, is that he would literally watch video of Michael, not just on the court, but off the court. At some point early in Kobe's career, if you remember, even his verbal tics and intonation were reminiscent of Jordan. And, you know, ironic considering, of course, that they ended up with the same head coach, which won them both an awful lot of rings. But I think that Kobe's desire to emulate Michael, the difference is that they just had different upbringings. No matter what, Michael was a kid from North Carolina, cut by his junior high school team, couldn't even make it in basketball. And then you've got Kobe, who was, you know, grew up in Italy, the son of a pro, a prodigy his entire life, never went to college, you know, went right from Lower Marion High School. So the backgrounds were so different. And at some point, no matter how much Kobe wanted to literally be like Mike, he was his own person based on his own personal experiences, even if they were only for 18 or so years. So it's Kobe could try to be like Michael, but at some point he was still going to be himself. And that is a person who was developed in a very different way growing up as he did and where he did.
Andrea Kramer, the great Andrea Kramer, joining us here. You can check her out on Real Sports. Tuesday, May 26th, Real Sports is back at 7 Pacific. on HBO and re-airs throughout the month. You can stream all Real Sports on HBO Go and HBO Now, and we'll get into that a little later as well, as we did the last time. So let me ask you about Phil, though. You brought Phil up, which was a great point. When you were around the team, the Bulls, how would you assess the way Phil treated Michael juxtaposed to the way he would treat the rest of the team?
I think the most amazing thing that Phil did was to get Michael to buy into the triangle. And I don't know that people, you know, we saw it earlier in the series and trying to explain exactly what it was, but it was sort of the... It was an offensive philosophy that was basically the antithesis of what Doug Collins had, who was obviously Phil's predecessor, was running with Michael. With Doug, it was, I can't get the ball into Michael's hands enough. Every play's got to go to Michael. Every play's got to go through Michael. It's Michael, Michael, Michael. And, you know, when you're the best player on the planet and establishing yourself as such, that may make sense. How many titles did they win? Phil comes in with his background. And one of the things that he had to do was to make everybody buy in, including Michael. Michael Jordan, who, remember, says there is no I in team, but there is an I in win. And now you've got to get him to buy into your philosophy, because Michael, yes, he carried the team. It was Michael and the Jordanaires. But the reality is that Michael still needed everybody else to step up, to contribute in their own ways, and it couldn't just be him. It was never one versus five on the court. And Phil got him to buy in. I believe in it. I may be in the minority here. I actually think Phil Jackson is underrated for what he did. It makes me crazy when I hear, oh, anybody could have won with Michael Jordan. Oh, did they? Did they win with Michael Jordan before Phil got there? Oh, anybody could have won with Kobe and Shaq. Really? Okay, how many titles did they win before Phil arrived? So Phil just had this unbelievable way of relating to people. You know, Phil used to give books to people. You want a good laugh, in fact?
Sure.
So, you know, Phil used to, he would come up with reading choices for players, right? Do you know about that?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So last week I was talking to Phil on the phone. We were catching up and comparing notes on the series. Before I get off the phone, he says to me, oh, are you familiar with the such and such reading series? And it's called Wolf Hall, and it's written by a woman named Hilary Mantel. And Phil is telling me all about it, and I should be reading it, and it would be really interesting. And all of a sudden I go, oh my God, you're still making reading recommendations to people. And we both kind of laughed about it. But that's who Phil is. Yeah. I mean, he was going to do that. And when I was at his house for Real Sports, you know, I'm the only journalist he ever let come out to Montana and visit him. And in the house, he's burning all the incense that he did when he was back at the Bulls. And he is who he is. And it's kind of like what we talked about with Jordan. They're their own unique people, and they're not going to change for anybody. And Phil didn't in terms of coaching Michael.
Andrea, there was some reporting that Scotty wasn't necessarily thrilled with the way he was portrayed in the documentary. How did you view the way Scotty was portrayed?
Well, I saw that as well. I have not spoken to Scotty, so I don't know firsthand his thoughts. But I'm going to say this, George. When given the opportunity to discuss not going into the game with 1.8 seconds left when Phil diagrammed the play for Tony Kukoc to take the last shot against the Knicks, when presented with that and that became a whole talking point in the story, Scotty said, if I had to do it all over again, I would do the same thing. I literally leapt from my chair and said, what?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Are you serious? Because looking back on things, there's ways to say it. You know what? I've had a Hall of Fame career. I'm incredibly grateful for that. You know, all the things that I accomplished and I won. But you know what? If there's one thing that I learned I would have done differently, it's understanding about being the team player. But he didn't do that. So truthfully, I don't want to hear that you didn't like the way you're portrayed. You portrayed yourself in a certain way. And that's, I've always been an action, not words kind of person. So don't tell me, show me. And what Scotty showed there is, with that comment, is that he still doesn't get it after all these years. Just my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt the exact same way you did when I saw that a couple of weeks ago. Last one on the documentary, the Steve Kerr story yesterday. I thought it was excellent storytelling and the way they tied everything in from beginning to end, including the stuff with his father, which, look, I was familiar with. But I would say, Andrea, it hit different when you're watching him and his mom, right, tell that story. Mm-hmm. How familiar were you with Steve's background when you were covering them?
Well, I don't know how familiar I was when I was covering them. Obviously, over the years, I have, you know, learned quite a bit about the story from Steve and from others. Steve, I give credit to Jason Hare, to the documentarian, the director, because Steve has always, always, always been extremely reticent to talk about his dad's assassination. And you talk about great storytelling, not only great storytelling in terms of developing the backstories of various characters, such as in this case, Steve Kerr, but managing to weave the personal narratives into the narrative of the Bulls run. And so here you are leading into what was the crowning achievement of Steve Kerr's career as a Chicago Bull, and then they give you the backstory. So from a journalistic storytelling perspective, I thought that was absolutely masterful the way they did that. And listen, I think that this is, whether it's Steve Kerr or Michael Jordan, the deaths of their fathers, and it was interesting when Kerr said that he and Michael had never really, quote-unquote, compared notes on that, he had never talked about their respective losses in that respect. But I think that it was so powerful to hear Steve talk about it and to see, again, how moved he was by that horrible event, just as Michael was in so many ways, and how both men thrust themselves into their sport, into basketball, to try to fill that void and to try to, you know, cover up the wound that existed for them. So I'm agreeing with you. I think it was just brilliant storytelling on Steve Kerr and perfectly woven into the narrative of the Bulls run as well.
The great Andrea Kramer joining us here. Of course, you can check out Real Sports Tuesday, May 26th, which is coming up next week, 7 o'clock Pacific, and re-airs throughout the month. You can stream Real Sports on HBO Go and HBO Now. So last week, we talked to you a little bit about the story you were working on, which is a follow-up with Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, the Chiefs offensive lineman. I think I did a much better job this time around pronouncing his name. I don't know if I did it right or not, but I think I was much closer this time.
You been practicing?
I may. I needed to impress you, Andrea. As I told you before, you know, I certainly grew up adoring you and Dan, as we talked about, and Charlie Steiner and all them. I wanted to make sure I impressed you this time around. But anyway.
Old, but that's okay. I appreciate it.
I did have a specific. You're not. You're great. I wanted to ask you a specific question that I didn't get a chance to ask you last time about this story that you're running on the 26th, which is how he, as someone who's a scholar, right, and is the only NFL player who doubles as a physician, as well as an offensive lineman or an NFL player, how he's received within the locker room construct. I'm curious to hear about that.
How he's received all around, or right now, you mean, because of what he's doing?
No, just in general, like how guys in that locker room feel about a guy who's a doctor also happens to play with them, just the randomness of that.
The one thing that Laurent is very, he's very cognizant of is never to overstep his bounds with the medical and the training personnel of the Chiefs. So it was interesting because, so on Thursday Night Football, for Hannah Storm and my broadcast on Amazon, we had the Chiefs game in which Patrick Mahomes dislocated his kneecap. And I had talked to Laurent after that, and I said, did you know? He goes, oh, I knew immediately. And I knew what it was, and it was just kind of funny to hear that here he is, you know, charged with protecting the quarterback, and then when he looks back and he sees his kneecap and he immediately knew that it was dislocated. Even when Laurent himself injured his knee, the doctors come over. He had actually been mic'd during the game, and Laurent actually says, it's my MCL, which is just kind of funny because he got hurt, and then he diagnosed himself. But the players, he's very, very careful. They have tremendous respect for him, but he's very careful not to overstep his bounds if they were to ask questions or anything like that. What also was interesting is that in talking to some of his teammates, I figured they would be most concerned about, okay, you're a doctor, you're this, you're that. What concerns do you have about head injuries? But as one of his teammates pointed out, he was more thinking, what about your hands? Because if you've ever seen particularly a lineman's hands, if you hold your hand out, the pinky could be kind of like looking like an L there and not sticking straight ahead. So, you know, your digits, especially as a lineman, can absolutely get destroyed, your hands. And this player said to me, wow, I mean, if you're going to be a surgeon, I'd be really concerned about his hands and his dexterity and things of that nature. So I hadn't thought about that, but I thought it was a great point. They, if anything, they're very proud of him, but also concerned, because a lot of guys maybe can't do something else, and here's somebody who absolutely can do something else and still is that devoted to football that he wants to continue to play despite having a medical degree.
It's a fascinating story. You can check it out on Real Sports coming up a week from tomorrow, Tuesday, May 26th at 7 Pacific. Re-airs throughout the month, of course, and you can stream all the Real Sports episodes on HBO Go and HBO Now. Andrea Kramer, thank you so much for coming back the following week here to talk to us about The Last Dance and talk to us about your stories on Real Sports. A pleasure, an honor. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, but don't be a stranger now. Just
no,
basketball is going away.
We need to talk to you more often. I want to do this way more often, for sure.
Take good care. Stay healthy. Stay healthy, most importantly.
You too. Take care, Andrea. There she is, Andrea Kramer, one of the best in the business. Certainly an honor to have her on here.